Welcome to Women Waken, a podcast that helps you heal spiritually from trauma in relationships, childhood, and early life conditioning to shift from a place of codependency into a divine feminine state of love, harmony, abundance, and joy. On Women Waken, we begin the journey to waken from the illusion of needing to prove our worth into the divine experience of knowing our worth. I'm your host, Whitney Walker. I'm a licensed mental health therapist, and I specialize in substance abuse, addiction, eating disorders, trauma, and spirituality. I'm also a fellow human being who has experienced most of these issues that I explore on this show. On today's guest episode, I have a long overdue guest, my dear friend, Raven Scott, who is the host of the fantastic and wildly successful podcast, The Empath and the Narcissist. She is also the author of The Empath's Guide to Rising Strong. Raven is an incredible resource for all survivors of narcissistic abuse. She bravely shares her story and helps others find their way through the challenges, the fear, and the darkness that comes when we're emerging from abusive relationships. Raven and I have so much fun catching up, talking about all sorts of things from, of course, narcissistic versus empath dynamic, her forte in human design, and all things spiritual awakening. So take a listen and enjoy. Hi, Raven. Welcome to the Women Waken podcast.
Hello. It's so good to be here.
So good to have you, my dear friend. Raven, you and I have known each other for a year now?
I think so. Yes. It feels like we've known each other for forever.
I know. We're kind of soul sisters. We are both fellow Virgos. I think we have a couple other similar placements.
Yeah. Our Venus and Leo, I know, is similar. And
Virgo. And we met, Raven, working with the same podcasting coach, the amazing Tig, and his company, Get More Listeners.
Yeah.
So on that note, you are the host of the incredible Empath and the Narcissist podcast. The extended tagline is?
Spiritual healing with human design.
Yes. Your other forte, human design, which is so fun and wonderful. I really like human design. I find it very intriguing and interesting. But before we get started, Raven, I would love for you to share with the audience about your journey of having what is a very successful podcast that has reached a lot of people and been a fantastic resource. That is no easy feat. It takes a lot of work and effort. And also, as we've talked about a lot, figuring out the tricks and the trades of how do we find our people? How do we allow for our show to reach the ears of the people that it will mean the most to?
Yeah. The journey of that podcast, it was so funny. I just got a message, like a little push. And it felt like a push, like an urge, like I have to start a podcast. And I had no idea what podcasting was. I didn't really feel like I was hopping on a trend, but I was listening to podcasts and audiobooks for my own personal journey of healing. I was a mom. When I started the podcast, it was 2020. So my kids were, I feel like they were like in preschool. Maybe one was in kinder. I don't remember exactly, but they were little. They were little. And it was 2020, was the right before COVID hit. And I just felt called to share like my experiences and how everyone was panicking. And maybe as a stay-at-home mom, I wasn't panicking because I was already trapped at home. I was like, it's okay, you guys, you're going to be okay. I felt like somehow I wanted to help relate them, and I'm such a spiritual person that I then wanted to share my spiritual healing journey and practices and what's helped me. It was like a ship in the ocean with no rudder, and I had no idea what I was doing, but it was good practice and it was fun. And then I really was called the next year to write my first book, Empath and the Narcissist, because it was just another cathartic healing process of writing out my memoir, what happened to me. And then at the end of each chapter, I was like, I don't want it to be like a complain fest book. I don't want it to be like a horror story book. So I really wanted it to be a healing tool. So after the end of each chapter, I wrote like the healing tools that helped me on my journey. And then all of a sudden, the next year, it took me a while. The next year, I was like, oh, how about I name my podcast the same name as my book? And I met Anthony through Get More Listeners because of my book, because they started out as publishers. So he's like, oh my gosh, you have a book. That's so awesome. And you have a podcast. And so they really guided me very gently on the path to connect the two. And yeah, then they've always been there for me and helped me out. So I was able to help them as well in their new business journey.
And they've been so successful. They're so wonderful. They're really prodigies.
Yeah, they're like entrepreneur prodigies for sure. They have the hustle, they have the discipline, and then they just have that like stay power. Like, this is our goal and we know we can reach it. I can see them. They put that work and effort into it. And I feel like that's podcasting too. It's like you have an effort, you have a goal, and then you got to put your energies and your brain into it. Like the discipline, just like going to the gym, of like showing up every day, showing up every time you need to record, and just like do what you need to do. It's a really very impactful way to serve, but I didn't really realize it would be as impactful as it has been.
Yes, absolutely. It definitely requires a lot of dedication, yet also it's a very strategic art, just like really any other form of sharing a publication or production. And that kind of like working out is like, you can do certain things, but if you're not thoughtful about it, you might not be building the muscle you want or losing the weight you want. And I feel like we both had to go through that journey with the podcasting, because you did have a different name for your podcast, I think, originally.
Multiple times, yeah.
And like yours, mine was very broad and was like, let's just talk about everything and just bring all the spiritual women together. And I still believe that's fantastic. But yeah, it built this frustration that was like, I'm doing this work, I'm dedicated, yeah, but it's not reaching the people that I know it can reach and that will benefit from it. And that's a hard feeling, just like anyone who's ever tried to lose weight and you're like, I go to the gym, I feel like I eat fruit and I'm not like seeing the results, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't realize that there was a strategy to actually create content. I just thought you just create content and then you slap a title on. And now in my journey, people say, I found you in the You May Also Like thread in Apple. And I was like, holy crap, that's so like, I have to celebrate and cheers to that, because that's only due to constructing everything in reverse. You find a title that really relates, and then you put in the work and you put in the effort to perforate and your flair, and like, and you create an awesome episode for people to listen to.
Yeah. So Raven, what compelled you to have this focus on the empath and the narcissist? Did you say that you wrote your book before you shifted the title? So was that sort of a separate like personal project while you were still doing the podcast under a different name?
Yeah. So I had my own business as an interior designer, and I always felt called to do more. I was like, this just feels so superficial. Like, I can't just do this in my life. Like I said, it was just this like push and this pull, like this soul yearning. My north node is in Gemini. So now that I know that, before I knew that, I was like, oh my gosh, like my soul was literally pushing me to speak, to write, to do, like to share information and to do all this stuff. But I didn't know it at the time. And I joined on Facebook. I put a post about hashtag me too. I can't remember, but I think it was in, when was hashtag me too? Like 2020, 2019? I don't remember. But it was around about then. Was it 2018 or 2019?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I know, I had toddlers then. So it was somewhere around there. It doesn't really, I guess, doesn't matter what year it was, but us Virgos, we're like, what year was that? So, okay, just let it go.
Fellow Virgos listening, that you get it. You get it,
right? You're like, the Virgos are like searching on Google, hashtag me too. When was that?
You know they are.
So because I had gone to therapy and had been confirmed that, yes, I was emotionally and sexually abused, and then I discovered later on that it was also narcissistic abuse that I experienced, I just, in solidarity to join and support all the women who have experienced sexual abuse and trauma, I joined hashtag me too. I put one post out. It was a picture of me and my girls, and I mentioned nothing of my abuser, like no name. Nothing, just that I experienced this and I know how you're feeling. And then the word got back to my ex and he completely attacked me. It was such a horrible psychic attack via text. I didn't answer it. I only read it, which was probably also a bad choice, but I kept reading all these things coming through. Like he sent me these videos and photos of us like naked, like he was going to blackmail me with this. And it was consensual. I can't believe you, you know, Aziz Ansari'd me and all this stuff and attack. I'm going to ruin your life. And my mind as a mom is going, they are my life. So you better not touch my girls. Right. So I'm like starting to really panic. And then I even called the police because I was like in such a panic. I thought they could help me, but they can't, by the way. They don't. Someone texts you, they can't really help you with any of that. And that was the moment after I got over all that attack. And then I was like, so panicked, so upset. And then I realized, you know what? There's nothing he has on me. He cannot cease and desist. He kept asking for my address. I'm like, who's going to give you your address when you're attacking somebody? Like, who's dumb enough to do that? It's so arrogant to think that I would actually reply with my address. And I just felt from then on, I was like, you know what? I can't stay silent anymore. Like, I said one thing and you attacked me. Now I'm going to say it all. Now I'm going to write a book and now I'm going to just show you, like, without revealing who you are, of course, I'm going to be safe. I'm going to create a pen name and let's go. Like, let's share with everyone about this abuse because it is so bad and so many people have experienced it. And the more that I shared and the more I talked about it and people would buy my book or say, you know what? I'm so grateful that you wrote this book. One girl even said, I was reading a part of your book, and at the same time I was reading your book, I was legally served by my ex. And she was like, and if I had not been reading your book, it would have been so emotionally so far worse for me. And I was like, oh my gosh, like who would have ever thought? And it was just really out of my, like, I can't be silent anymore about this. I just have to bring awareness.
That's so incredible. And we're all grateful that you did write this book because though that is really needed right now is more of a speaking to our true experiences about these things that are unfortunately way too commonplace.
And the trick is they control you through the fear. And I'm like, well, I'm educated enough and I have an attorney close by my side. And so I can actually gain like real legal counsel and be like, you know what? If we went to court, there would be no legal action because there is literally no, I'm not outing anybody. I'm sharing my story without providing anyone's identity because I don't need to. It could be Bob Joe over in New Hampshire. It doesn't matter. Like this behavior is so relatable to everyone in the world. We don't need to out who they are. The entity and the act is enough. And we don't need to stay silent about it. That energy does not need to control us anymore.
Yeah. And people clearly resonated with that through your book and also through your podcast, because it did really take off and grow. Can you tell us a bit about that journey, like working with Tig and seeing your audience expand and people reach out to you? How did that feel?
It felt really validating, like after all the work I put into it. And it's so funny, like that spirit kept pushing me to do it. And then it kept pushing me to stay with it. There were so many times where I was going to quit. And I remember meeting them and I just told them, like, I'm not getting enough return out of this. And it's so much energy and like the editing and the producing, it's so much. Anthony was like, no, don't quit. Like, you've got something really good here. So that journey was really hard. Like, it's really hard. Like you said, just going to the gym, you're like, I'm not losing these 10 pounds I need to lose. Like, can I keep going? What is really like, what? Why? Can I just have that donut? Because what's the point? Like, I'm not losing the 10 pounds. So I just kept going. Spirit kept encouraging me to go. And it was that energy, that after energy that didn't ever fade. It was like, but you can't stop talking about it because people need this. And then people would reach out to me. Every time I'd feel like I need to quit or it's not worth it, I would get a DM. I would get an email. I was like, right? It was like, keep going. So it's like the universe keeps sending you that extra strength to keep on doing the work that I guess I was called here to do. It's kind of in my chart, so I can't really resist it. And I even tried to stop. It reached great heights and I would love for it to grow even more, but I was like, okay, like I've finally gotten some really good downloads. And, you know, I always look at the downloads. And honestly, sometimes those numbers are just vanity numbers, just like Instagram. But I was like, but I need to take a break. Like my kids are out of school. I need to be their mom. I need to be there for them. So I'm just going to take a break and go be the mom. So it dropped off. But at the same time, I'm trying to keep my train of thought because we were talking about the journey. But I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to quit. It was like a big ship I created and I couldn't stop it. And so people kept messaging me and kept listening, even when I wasn't producing episodes. And I was like, well, I guess this ship I've created is now going to take off with me, or I'm going to stay on it and continue to drive it. So
it has a life of its own now.
It had a life of its own. You create like this entity. It has a life of its own. Exactly.
That's what it is. You birth it. That's why, you know, these creative productions are a true birthing. Difficult, arduous work of like the gestation where you're like, I know it exists. I know it can be created. And that's like the part that you just stretch through and just work so hard for. And then it's birthed into the world. And then in a way, once it's out, it does kind of just sort of take on its own life force. And it's a lot about just trusting that it's going to become what it needs to, even if you don't attend to it for a while, right? Whether it's like someone who's a writer, right? They might have great success in a book and be like, I need a break from that world, from publishing, from touring, from book signing, but they might find their way back to it. But that book lives on and you never know who might find it. And that's what I love about things that are birthed creatively is that you've done it. Even just one podcast episode, you know, you don't know who might hear it in 5 years from now. That's like, wow, this just changed my life hearing this message today. And you speak of vanity numbers. That's the part that's important to work towards letting go of, because it's not about that. It can be hard not to, you know, we're very much like, we want the results type of mentality as humans. And we're all like, ooh, look at this. I got, and it's fine to get excited about it because it is showing that people are responding to it. We want to see that, but it really is about the quality, right? Rather than quantity. If you have 50 people who your episode changed their trajectory in their life and their relationship, that's what counts.
Then you did your job. And that was the thing with my book. I'm like, I'm just going to write it. I'm going to share the tools that I have. And if it helps one other person, then I am absolutely like, that's it. That's all that matters. It's fulfilling to me. And even I was thinking, even if it just helps my daughters and no one else cares about it, that's kind of what I was writing it for too. That was my healing journey, was for my daughters, because I didn't want them to be vulnerable.
Well, and that's also the risk. You mentioned cease and desist, Raven, is when we decide to share our personal story to help others, we're risking putting it out there. You know, it's we don't know who might hear it. And even though we're doing it with the intention of reaching people who need it for healing, for help, for guidance, it might piss some other people off.
Of course, it always will piss some other people off, like that you're outing their bad behavior or revealing who they truly are behind their mask. What was so funny about that hashtag me too is like, I didn't reveal anyone's name or identity at all. So only the guilty party knew, only the person who knew my face from my picture and the guilty party knew. And they make it such a big deal. Like, do you know how many people and strangers who've seen my posts, who watch my lives and all this stuff, right? They see my face. They don't know my own personal life and my inner, you know, circle. And it doesn't matter. Like, they don't care who my abuser was at all. They just want the information to help them in their life. But the perpetrator doesn't care about that. They only care about themselves and their good face in the world amongst their tiny circle. Like, uh-oh, I'm going to have to take responsibility and they're going to know what I really did. Yeah, it's just crazy.
So with your work being so focused on the concept of the empath narcissist dynamic, why do you think it's come to light so powerfully in recent years? Why do you think that so many people hear that and say, oh my gosh, that was my last relationship? And I know it's gone on since time memoriam, like it's been around, but it feels like it's reaching kind of a fever pitch. What do you feel? And especially when you hear back from your audience and all these people, like, what do you think is sort of the occurrence that's happening that's leading to such high numbers of people feeling like they've been involved with a abusive narcissist?
I think the consciousness is rising. Like, I think instead of just accepting it as, well, that's just a man's temperament, right? Like that old adage of the wives in the 1950s, like there were plenty of narcissists that were put on pedestals and women and wives just had to put up with it and just be quiet. That's not happening anymore. Like all of, each generation grows and evolves a little bit more and puts up with less and less evil. And I think that's where we're at. We're just putting up with less and less evil. It's always been there. Evil surrounds us here on Earth. And it's just our tolerance is getting less and less each generation. Like conscious parenting came about because now we're not tolerating being narcissistic authoritarian parents. And so when there's a certain group of people who do that, then the consciousness rises. And then we're like, well, we're also not going to tolerate it in our romantic lives. And we're also not going to tolerate it with our parents. Like it just, it starts to apply to everything in your life, especially if you have certain astrological aspects where that's just part of what you're dealing with in this lifetime.
Yeah, I like that. I like acknowledging that it's about a shift in consciousness and not that, I mean, I think it is that narcissism is on the rise in terms of it has been building over generations, that it just becomes so much the norm that what we call narcissism has been sort of this allowance for certain people to act and behave a certain way. And as you said, for the other person to just sort of take it and accept it. But it is this sort of shift into this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel healthy. This doesn't feel like it's honoring me. And I think that's what, as consciousness rises, we think more about our own well-being and not as much about having to please everybody else. It's like, well, if I respected myself as much as I did other people, would I tolerate this? Right. And as we start to say, no, like I love myself enough that I'm not going to let somebody try to manipulate me and tell me that I'm this, that, or the other thing, or that I'll never be loved if I don't let them be with me and whatever it is. I like the idea that it's about a shift in consciousness and a higher level of self-love where we're saying, I deserve better. And I don't want to carry this on is I think what we're also feeling. I've heard that this time is a time of breaking generational curses, right? Yeah. And we're like, fuck this. Like, I don't want my kids to see this as like what they are just inevitably going to have to experience because that's what relationships are is 90% of the time it's going to be with somebody that's not going to treat you right and that's going to abuse you. No.
Yeah. And part of that is recognizing, no matter if you want to label or diagnose it at all, it's like, well, I'm not going to do what my parents did. And therefore, I'm going to have to take responsibility for when I make mistakes because we are always acting subconsciously unless we're consciously making an attempt to make space for those uncomfortable emotions our children have, apologize for saying something that just out of habit and out of like, from your mirror neurons, what was modeled to you, you do it to your kids. And it's like, now you have to make the conscious effort. Are you going to not take responsibility for it and just smear it off? Or are you going to actually apologize to your child and continue to build that relationship, being that cycle breaker?
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's the challenge of when you are the disruptor or cycle breaker, again, people are going to get mad at you. People don't want to hear that the way they've been going about their lives is problematic. It's the same sort of dynamic, whether it's narcissistic abuse or if it's like drug addiction, where, you know, alcoholism is a family disease. Drug addiction, it's everybody plays a part in their own way. And, you know, it's been shown that a family will try to keep sort of the homeostasis, even if it's very riddled with sickness and illness, right, that no one's addressing. And the disruptor that comes out and says, hello, we need an intervention here. There's an issue here. This isn't the case for all families, but a lot of them will say, take it easy. Like, no, there's no big problem. They just need to cut back a little bit. They'll deal with it. And there's those of us who are like, no, like I'm going to do something about it. And people don't like that. So we run the risk, those of us who are cycle breakers, of having to disconnect from people in our lives, even if they're family members.
Yeah. And it's really no excuse for them to be tearing you down or to shushing you, being quiet, or threatening you with a cease and desist because you're profiting off of your family's mistakes. Sorry, I'm quoting something I heard recently. And it's like, that's not family to tear you down. If they're concerned about it, if they're panicking in their inner child, family would then have a conversation that would be like, this makes me uncomfortable. Can you remove this part from whatever? Or, hey, stop saying this to your friends. But the toxic family only cares, again, they only care about how they appear to the world and to themselves, and they want their own narrative to be played. And because their own narrative is playing that they didn't do anything wrong and that they're superior and they're fine, and they want to push the guilt away, then they justify why they attack you. They justify why they discard you or don't talk to you or ignore you and just like placate, like pretend that everything is perfectly fine or don't talk to you at all. Like there's so many excuses they make, and it's really hurtful to that cycle breaker that we have to go through yet again another healing process because your family of origin has discarded you or attacked you just for being the cycle breaker. Yeah, it's a big burden.
Yeah, and we want to find a way to make peace with our situation, because as the disruptor, people are going to launch their frustrations and anger at us. And it takes a lot of strength to know so strongly that you believe in what you're doing, that you believe to voice your truth and your feelings and to walk through the repercussions of it, even when, again, it's like people throwing stones at you. And, yeah. You know, I know when I've been in the situations, I'm still working with that facet of making peace with them and saying they are where they are in their journey. And the truth is so hard to accept that some people just, they can't even honor it. And then, you know, then we get into the whole concept of like, what is a narcissist? And sometimes it seems like somebody that's detached themselves so much from the truth of themselves, from the general truth, that lies have become so commonplace that it's basically their language. And they have no qualms, is what I've felt, is there's no qualm with lying. Maybe deep, deep down there. I've heard that theory that like narcissists like just pushed that fear and that doubt and that insecurity so deep down that it does sort of rule their life, but they never look at it.
There was only one time with my ex that he broke down and he looked like a broken little child in our relationship. And I still don't know if this was real or if it was a tactic, because that made me hold on to him even tighter. Like, oh my God, look at this wounded person. Like, I need to stay and take care of him and fix him. Truly, they are wounded. And we'll never know if that was actually like a psychopathic like play out and he did it on purpose, or it was a real true moment where he just felt so defeated by life. I think it's in there, but they don't show it because they live in their delusion. They have to sell their lies in order to keep shoving that down and to look good and perfect and to survive, I guess, in this world.
Yeah, that's really what it is. And I've had those moments too, where I saw the little child version of the narcissist. And I think it is real, but it just like anything else, it's like if you bury it enough, you almost can believe like, okay, it's so far buried, it doesn't exist, but then it does exist. It's a life force. So I think sometimes it'll show itself just a little before they can bury it back down again. And, you know, I heard that once, which is that like, be wary because your narcissist might show a glimmer of the true self because it is there. You can't truly destroy a soul. But I do believe that in our human experience, we can completely detach from our souls, that we don't embody our souls. And if you're just a walking body, you're basically just a walking ego, which is kind of what narcissists are. All they care about is what they're getting from somebody and how they can manipulate people to get those things. And they can lie without a problem. They can use people, sociopath. It all kind of goes together. So I think you can get a glimmer, and it's devastating. You know, I remember seeing that, and our empathic nature is, gosh, let me help you out of that hole. It sounds terrible. It's heartbreaking. But it's their path to walk, right? In each lifetime, we each have different experiences. I've come to believe that people like you and I interact with narcissists because in this lifetime, they get a little bit of a step towards enlightenment. They're never going to get there, but people like us help them to have those small moments where they say, is that what this is about? Like actually being connected with your heart and with your soul. But then again, in this lifetime, they push it away. Do you understand?
Yeah. And we can't fix them. Number one, I definitely have to address that. Like, that was a huge mistake that I stayed to try and fix him. That was a waste of my life. But at the same time, karmically, I would have not met my wonderful partner I'm with now at the right timing I did if I didn't stay. So everything, I think, plays out just according to how our soul kind of plans it. But I think that they show us the glimmer. And yes, hopefully we're that light to help them in the next lifetime. But I think narcissists epically have failed their lifetime in this lifetime. They've epically failed everyone around them. just by not taking responsibility. It's not that hard. You're not going to die, but they feel like they're going to die if they take on any responsibility and admit that they're wrong.
Yeah. And the person I was dealing with, it just felt very pathological. Like there wasn't even when I would be like, hey, you're safe here, you can share. It was just so deeply ingrained that they couldn't go there. And, you know, you spoke of them projecting and their fears, and they just kind of dig themselves deeper into this hole. And I remember having this fight one time with this guy I was dating, who I believe was a narcissist. And he just like delivered this whole prologue, all these things about me. I could tell that he was literally telling his story to me. He's like, you're lost. You're a lie. Your life is a lie. Everything you say is a lie. And you're so deep in your lie that you can't even find your way out. And I was just like standing there like, this doesn't even make sense. Nothing in my life is a lie. And I was like, oh God, that's what his life is.
He's that's
in a world of lies. And he doesn't even know who he is anymore because the lies have built up so much that he's trapped by them.
That's insane. Like the clarity of you being able to see that when he was doing it, that's exactly what they do to everybody. And then we absorb it as empaths. We're like, oh my gosh, you're right. I don't know. Like I recently was told, like, I can't believe a word out of your mouth anymore because you're saying your whole life was a lie. And I'm like, I kind of felt the same way. I felt like my whole life was a lie and I had to discover myself. But I don't know what you're talking about. You can't believe a word that I'm saying now. I can't believe a word that you're saying to me right now. It's like the projection is so real. It's like the struggle is real when you're talking to them. It's insane making.
Yeah. And I was actually going to ask that for people listening who are in the midst of it, or maybe recognizing like, I might need to leave this friendship, this relationship, and or even like wondering their connection with their parents, because that happens often. How do you talk to a narcissist? I feel like you've probably done that episode on your show, how to talk to a narcissist, but like, is there a way to do
it? That's a really good one. I haven't specifically done how to talk to a narcissist, but I've talked about Gray Rock. I've talked about Gray Rock. I've talked about the only way that you can win with a narcissist is not to play. So my short answer is you don't talk to the narcissist in order to play. Like you don't react to them because whatever reaction you have, they will use to control you. They will use as ammo against you. And so you really can't say anything. You can say, interesting. Mm-hmm. But that's it. If you're like stuck with them and you can't leave them, you can't go no contact. It is very just short and zero emotion. Because emotion really is their thermometer to see if they're controlling you.
Yeah.
So if you have no emotion and you don't have a reaction, they don't like it. And that will dispel all their power, essentially.
Yeah. It's a heavy topic. It's a challenging thing. It takes a while to recover from that, those narcissistic connections.
They literally like wreck with your brain chemistry.
Yeah.
I heard this snippet from someone else on some podcast, but it was like on Instagram. I have no idea which podcast. But they were talking about the pigeons. They did a study about pigeons a long time ago, like, I don't know, 1970s or 80s, giving a certain group of pigeons food consistently. Like every time they pushed the pedal, they always got food. So they were just like chilling. They were just like, whatever, like, I don't need food all the time. And this other group of pigeons got this intermittent reward, which is what the narcissist gives us, where they push the pedal sometimes, they would get food, they push the pedal other times, and they wouldn't get food. And so those pigeons were obsessed with pushing that pedal. And that's how the narcissist hooks us into being obsessed with them. Because it's like, well, I got it this time, but now I don't get it. So what am I doing wrong? And so we're just getting this intermittent reward with them. And so it literally messes with your brain chemistry. So when you try and leave, or when you do leave, you feel like your arm is lost, like been cut off, because now you're going no contact with them, but it feels incredibly painful. It's like it creates this panic in your body.
It does. And then the other aspect, I was talking to my friend about this, who just got out of this really horrifying situation where she just got totally blindsided by the person she was with. Basically one of the situations where they have a completely separate life. And then you're like, oh my God.
Another partner cheating. Yeah. I like that.
She is like the most brilliant woman. She's a very successful businesswoman. Absolutely stunningly gorgeous. You hear it all the time, right? You're like, they can do it. They're charming.
Absolutely.
And we were just talking about how wild it is that you can figure that out. You can find it out, but you can still feel a bit heartbroken. And we were saying how you think, well, if they're this narcissist and it was just manipulation, then what was that love? Like it felt like love. It felt real, but what was it? we connected. They seemed to be loving me and affectionate towards me. Like, was it all a lie?
Is learned behavior. In order for them to survive in the world without being outcast by everybody, they're very good at mirroring behavior and empathy and knowing exactly what you want and need. And they do it for just enough time to get you hooked into their love and affection. And then they can stop essentially putting energy into their relationship. And then they'll start to slowly, like little paper cuts, cut you down, make you start feeling insane, projecting onto you. And they've done such a good job at hooking you in the beginning, because they are expert manipulators and they're expert at mirroring that empathy and the behavioral patterns that you desire. Then you're always hooked onto, well, they did this, then there's hope. There's hope that they're there. They're this lover. So it's like the carrot in front of the donkey, and the donkey never gets to eat the carrot ever again. They get to eat it before they go on the trek, and then the carrot goes out in front of the donkey. Donkey never gets that carrot again.
Yeah, but they're always hoping for it.
Always, it's right there in front of their face. They're always future faking, or you're always thinking, well, remember back when we first dated, they were like that. Like, it's always in the forefront. But yeah. Never get it.
And then another piece of that, Raven, is, and I think this is important for people to hear, because it is a lot of just mimicking the behavior they believe people want to hear, the mirroring. They call it when the mask slips. Because I know I had that specifically with this guy I was seeing, where it was interesting. I had a moment where I saw him interact with my dog, and he typically was like very loving. And he had this look of hatred on his face, this dark look. And I was like, you don't like my dog, do you? And for anybody who has a dog, you got to like my dog. If you're going to date me, get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah.
But I could just see it, Raven. Like, usually he was like, oh, she's, but I could just see him being like, God, you're, because they get jealous. He knows how close I am to my dog. But it was this look where I was like, oh my God, what's behind those eyes? And I shared this with a client recently, and she said, thank you so much for saying that, because I had an ex where we got in a fight once, and I swear it was like he got in this mode where his eyes just went black, and it was like there was nobody there, or there was something else behind those eyes.
A dark entity was behind those eyes, for sure.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's so alarming where you're like, who am I sleeping with? Like, I'm sharing a bed with this guy. I'm having sex with this person, and he looks like there's something not great behind there.
One time, I was kicked out onto my balcony naked. Like, I think I had underwear on, but that was it. And my balcony, it was cold. It was night. I feel like there was a little bit of moisture. I can't exactly remember. I feel like there was some type of, well, maybe there wasn't rain, but it was cold. Okay. I was freezing. Well, either way, I should not be out there naked, locked out on my balcony. So he locked me out, but he didn't throw me out. He like went out with me for a second. I don't remember how I got out there, to be honest. But anyways, I turn around and I'm like, let me in. And he's standing at the door with those creepy eyes. And then he smiled with that psychopath smile. And he just stood there and he was enjoying it. He was enjoying how I was squirming. It's almost like, you know, like in those movies, you see a psychopath like with an animal or something, and they're like torturing it and they're like smiling. Like, that's exactly the look. And it was like, why the heck that moment didn't wake me up? I don't know, but it didn't yet. I was not awakened yet.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. And for anyone listening, these are the signs to look out for. Because most of us do write it off. I don't know if that was the last time you were with this person, but often we'll let incidents slide because they come back around and they put their
mouth. Totally let it slide. I let it slide because I wasn't being hot enough in the bedroom for him. So apparently I deserved it. And I was mad at him when I got in. I was like, how could you do that? Like, you just like stood there and I was locked out. I was mad for a second, but it just didn't register to me that that was psychopathic behavior. I had no idea. You know, like, I didn't know any better. I was naive. I just thought that was just, I don't know. Like, I don't know why I didn't think that was more consequential than it was.
Well, because in those moments, Raven, it's just you and this person that you believe loves you. And they are so good at rationalizing and making you feel crazy that you don't see why they did this, that you can't see that it really wasn't that out of line, because of course they would have done this. And it really was your fault, because you should have been doing what they want in the bedroom, and how could they not have done this? And again, that's why you have the Empath Narcissist podcast, is because as empaths, we're always trying to be self-aware, to develop. And so we think, okay, he has a point.
Right.
It won't happen again because I'll be more aware. I won't be so selfish. Yeah. I remember that's what I was told a lot. Was like, you're just selfish. Like, you're just not considering someone else's needs. And part of me was like, yeah, but that's a strange need that you just want something done exactly tailored to you, right? Like, let's talk about it together. But no, I was to blame because I didn't know exactly how they expected it. And I should have done that.
Yeah, they set it up to where it's like, well, this is just how you act in relationships. This is just, like, what a healthy relationship is sacrificial and, you know, this or whatever. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. And then you get in a healthy relationship and you're like, oh, this doesn't even exist there. That's not what this is about. This is not, exactly. This is not normal behavior. This is not normal treatment. And it really is so sad and tragic that so many of us have to go through the looking glass in terms of what we think a relationship is supposed to be like.
Yeah.
It's an upside down way to engage with somebody, to be treated like that.
It is. I mean, I can only blame my naivety and just not really having experience, but I sure as heck, cycle breaker, I'm not going to just sit back and say nothing about how someone should be treating my children in their relationship. Like, I'm going to share with them. Like, I already do now in their friendships at school. You don't have to play with her. If she's bossy and she's pushing your boundaries, that's not healthy. You don't have to play with her. You know, I think so many of us were forced and they're still being forced. Play with everyone. Be a nice girl. Don't be mean and not include her. It's like, yeah, but she's always pushing my boundaries. So then we're taught at such young age to put up with people pushing our boundaries to be nice. And that transpires into adulthood.
It does. Absolutely. And once you've continued that behavior for so long, it's hard to break and it's hard to let go of that and to not associate that with, well, good people do this. So I need to be a good person and I need to just let everybody have whatever access they want to me. And it was interesting, Raven, you know how certain phrases will come up when you need to hear them. I had a big shift last summer in towards my understanding of like who I really wanted to attract and my patterns with that. And people kept saying, well, then don't allow him access to you. Like, stop allowing access. And I was like, that's so true. Like, that's exactly what a boundary is saying, no, you can't have access to me. You can't just call me when you want. You can't just ask for this whenever you want it. I need to honor me and not just allow, because I've done that before and said, oh yeah, everybody have come on in. Like, no locks, no doors here. Like, full access for everybody. And we get depleted that way. And we get people who are not well-intentioned to come in and are like, cool, I'll take everything, please. Thank you.
Yeah. And then for some reason, us empaths are like, we get gaslit when we try and approach that. You're like, no, this is not how it is. And then they gaslight you. And then you're like, oh, thank you so much for enlightening me. Like, abuse me some more. Like, it's just the craziest making experience ever. So you're right. This whole like virtue is love. The highest virtue is love. I feel is detrimental to empaths dealing with narcissists. It is not love, because I've been bitten like a snake every single time I've tried to go in and fix something with love with a narcissist. It's like, no, boundaries and self-care has to be our first virtue. Sorry. Totally. We can love, but
totally. Those are such beautiful virtues. And I love that more people are recognizing that. My hope is for future generations is that that is what's instilled in them from a young age. And so that they don't have to go through what we've been through. And from a young age, they'll say, whoa, I do not deserve to be treated that way. This is not healthy behavior. And it really does start with how we're raised. And I think that our parents did the best they could. They were not given this messaging and encouragement, right? So that's, I think it's, we really are seeing a shift right now. I believe it's for the best that good changes are happening. Yeah. But we do need people like you out there because we're still going through it. Like, we're still swimming at the sea of like, dealing with these sharks. So thank you for that. But Raven, I want to allow you some time to talk about your other forte, which is human design, because that is a really fun thing to explore when we start to realize, like, I'm a powerhouse. I'm a strong, incredible person that deserves to be respected and have boundaries. But I also have like this whole ass design of who I am and what my soul purpose is and my gifts in this world are. Like, let's stop having people tell me what my value and worth is. And let's start honing into that and bringing that up, because that's fun.
Yeah. And you know what? Human design gives you that affirmation of who you truly are. And what I found for me personally, and for other people, I read their charts, it's like, oh my God, like, you're saying that that's like my superpower. Like, that's who I truly am, because the narcissist told me that that was my greatest weakness, or that was always my problem that I had to fix, right? The narcissist is trying to fix away your authentic self, because I truly think that this dark entity is trying to keep your light from shining out to the world. And you're here for this purpose, and they can see that you actually are a powerhouse. So I do also feel like they prey on us who are here to spread light. I truly believe that. So human design is so amazing. It incorporates astrology. Do you want me to kind of give a brief overview?
Get into it.
Okay. Human design is a modern system downloaded by Ra Uruhu in the 1980s. And so it is a combination of astrology, the I Ching, which is like a Chinese divination, kind of like lightning over water kind of energy type stuff. It's directly related also to like feng shui. And then we have the Kabbalah system, which is all those shapes you see on the body graph, the chakra system, and then the modern science of neutrinos. So we have like this map of ourselves, of our unconscious personality traits, things and patterns that happen within you all the time that you don't really realize because they're unconscious. You're like, why does this keep happening to me? Okay, let's look in your red lines and your human design chart. Let's take a look at over here. And then you have your conscious map of your energies on your human design chart. So those are all the things that you're more aware of, your talents, your abilities, and sometimes things that you need to also work to soften. If you have something defined in your chart, sometimes we need to work to soften those things and not be so black and white if you have a defined head center or ajna center like I do. So I really learned to like soften and be more open, like the open ajnas. So those centers all relate to the different chakras. Centers are shapes on the body graph. So if you get your free chart, I can pull up your free chart for you, or you can get it at Jovian Archive. It'll have like a body graph with all these like shapes on it with all these numbers. And you're like, this is alien. I don't even know what I'm looking at. Like, I don't even know how to dive into it. So that's why I also, you know, published my second book, Empath's Guide to Rising Strong. So you can like actually figure out what your chart is saying. I have a whole human design, like 101 how-to understanding in there, because it's a lot.
It is. And when you work with people on their human design, what are you most focused on? Like, what are the top things that you want to convey to them or point out to them on their chart? Because it is a pretty extensive chart, right? Mm. It's pretty hard to understand like the full spectrum of your human design. But what do you start with? And what kind of awareness and light bulb go off for people when they're like, wait, say that again. You just said something that, because that's how I felt when I did human design. I was like, oh, that actually makes some sense. The same way that astrology does, that, you know, the gene keys does, all these different modalities that help us have a greater understanding of why we are the way we are. So what are some of the main things that you hit on with people?
Especially those who are coming to me being abused by a narcissist, I take a look at, first of all, their inner authority, because that is your unique set of how to listen to your intuition. The narcissist has confused you, completely cross-wired your brain, and you don't know how to trust yourself anymore. So knowing your inner authority, there are five different types to help you listen to your intuition and then gain the confidence like, okay, this truly is my intuition. I feel confident that I can trust this message because I'm doing it through my inner authority. That's something that I encourage them to exercise and start to grow and develop, because then you can gain the confidence. You can trust yourself again through that modality. And then the open, like the centers that are white, I like to just point those out because those are our most conditioned centers, and narcissists, that's what they do. They're experts at conditioning us, like to walk on eggshells, to do whatever the heck they want, to let them get away with the abuse. And so just bringing awareness to like, okay, like you were always the people pleaser in the relationship. You're absorbing all the emotions of the narcissist like a sponge because you have this solar plexus white. It's open over here. That means that you're amplifying that energy. So then now you have awareness. Now you can guard it up, do some exercises and meditations, different things, mantras to guard your empath aura, right? Your energy shield up so that those people aren't, using your phrase, gaining access to you, and you're not amplifying their agendas, their emotions, their sense of urgency. You know, people who have that open root center are scammed easier because we are amplifying the urgency of someone else trying to like rush us into something. Like any scam, if you ever notice, like whenever you've been scammed, like You didn't have time to think about it. Like you just got rushed into it. And that's what the narcissist does, is they love bomb you and they scam you into the relationship. So yeah, those are the two main things that I take a look at in someone's chart and help them focus in on and bring awareness to.
And then what about in terms of like life purpose or like soul purpose or what your gifts are? Does human design help illustrate that or illuminate that?
It does. Very similarly to astrology. This is where the astrology comes in, as I'll take a look at your planets and we'll take a look at what profile line is in your north node and what gates are your north node in, as well as I go to your astrology chart, what house is your north node in, and then what zodiac is your north node in. And we like have all that information that we can really pull something together to help guide you. It's like a roadmap for your soul's purpose. In addition to that, we also have the incarnation cross, which is like an overarching life theme of yours. And sometimes it's something that you need to work on because maybe you've been conditioned out of it or that you need to embrace more. Some of them could be like, for instance, the vessel of love. The incarnation cross, the vessel of love, is you are here literally to be love. You are the vessel of love to everyone that you're with. And so if we're talking about you being attracting narcissists, you need to continue to hold your vessel of love, but shield up from that vessel of love being sucked out and used and abused. So there's different incarnation crosses. Mine is incarnation cross of dominion. So for me, it's like I can easily dominate things in a good way to succeed, but also in a bad way, like I could step on people's toes and just like take over and take charge in a situation where it wasn't my role to do. So it depends on your incarnation cross. So like there's some self-development for me in that incarnation cross. And of course, the vessel of love, there's self-development there too, because you don't want to just like let everyone in and take away your love and your light.
Yeah. Well, I love how you've woven this together, Raven, just helping people to understand where they're coming from. Coming out of the illusion of a narcissistic partner or narcissistic abuse is overwhelming. It's confusing. But then to also weave in like, hey, but guess what? You have tools, you have your own abilities, you are your own solid person, and let's focus on that.
I feel like human design and astrology is like a flashlight. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that I am the hand to pull people out of the quicksand. And then I also have the flashlight in my hand. It's like, okay, you're out now. Let's get you out of this dark pathway so that you can really be aware of yourself and into the light.
Yes. And I also appreciate them as a flashlight because it helps me to kind of let myself off the hook. Because sometimes we can beat ourselves up for being like, why am I so stuck on this? Or why is this so hard for me? And sometimes we look at our chart and you can see like, oh, it's kind of written in the stars that this is part of my challenge in this lifetime. It's part of my shadow self. We all have them. We all have aspects that are going to be things we're working through in this lifetime or things that are challenging. And it's nice to understand that. And it really is liberating to be like, oh my gosh, like that makes so much sense. You were talking to me the other day about the planets in the 8th and 10th house.
12th, the 8th and 12th house, yeah.
And that you actually had an astrologer. You have her on your show regularly, right?
Yeah, her second appearance is going to be in March. But the first appearance was a couple months back. I can even share with you the link so that people can just click in the show notes directly to it, because it was so fascinating. She brought this idea to my podcast about she's been studying these charts and consistently over and over, people who have planets or planets opposite these houses, the 12th and the 8th house are essentially the spiritual healers of the world. But how do we become spiritually awakened to our healing? And how do we know what to heal? It's our struggles and our growth. So we experience either cheating, persecution, abuse, or parental abandonment if we have these planets in these houses. And I was like, holy crap, yes, like this all totally makes sense now. And it feels good because it's not me. Like the problem isn't me. This is just like the stage that the life has set up for me. Like I've chosen this contract in life. It has these certain aspects. Here's my lesson in life and here's the pattern. And okay, let's figure out how we can evolve out of it versus continually be stuck as a victim in it.
Yes. And make it our superpower, right?
Yeah.
Make things that were so difficult to go through and that almost took us out to reclamation and rise like the phoenix, right? And then be like, bam, world, look out, because here I am.
I love the phoenix.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the other thing I want to say about the rise of consciousness is that in 2027, the global collective incarnation cross, we're right now in the cross of planning, which is like systems and planning and like collaborating, into the rise of the sleeping phoenix. So the phoenix gets right, like the whole myth about it is that it burns into flames and then it becomes a new little baby sprout bird and then grows like quickly and then flies out of the ashes of that fire. And that is what we're collectively going to be in. And I feel like that's where there's so many more and more people spiritually awakening, because we're all going to be like this huge flock of red phoenix birds in that incarnation cross time starting in 2027.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love it. I can't wait to be a red phoenix bird. That sounds fantastic. But I'm picturing a dragon. I'm really feeling into this year of the dragon.
You're the dragon.
Yeah. Dragoness.
Yes. The green dragon. I know. This year is the green wood dragon, meaning I was like studying this Chinese astrology because I'm so into it, because I love to do feng shui. And like my husband jokes, because he's Vietnamese, but he's like, you sound like my mom. Like every year she'd be like, this will be the year. And she's like always looking at like, which one's the luck. And so I know I've turned into his mom. So I was studying this and it's this little sprout. So you know how like when you grow a bamboo shoot and it has to be a sprout first before it gets big. So this year it's like new beginnings. I don't know if you've discovered or kind of been feeling everyone around you and you have been shifting into something new. Like we have a new sprout and we need to water it and we need to love it and nurture it and be disciplined around it so it can grow big and sustainable into a big tall bamboo shoot. So that's this year of the green dragon.
I totally hear that. And I feel like I've been preaching that. I'm like, you guys, there's something, this year is the year that like we're sprout, like it's coming through. We were,
yeah,
I feel like in 2020 and we've been underground, like what the heck is going on? Something's happening. I'm feeling drawn towards nourishing some ideas. I don't know why. Is anything going to come of it? And this year is the year that things start to pop off. And I see the phoenix rising from the ashes, those red phoenix birds, is when people are going to be looking for more of this kind of knowledge and understanding than ever, because the consciousness is going to rise at such a quick rate at one point that people are going to drop a lot of the systems and concepts that they've been so attached to, because they're going to realize it doesn't serve us. It keeps us sort of beholden to these ideas that don't help us feel empowered, that don't help us feel like we get to use our own wisdom or knowledge. And we're going to be seeking out different ways of thinking and being in the world. Yeah. So the little sprouting now is going to be what's serving other people in your, it's a phenomenal, fascinating time.
And it's the perfect timing that Pluto has just entered Aquarius and she's going to be in there for a while, blowing up all of the systems that don't work in all the social structures. So watch like what you just said was that. And it's like, I love how all the divinations completely like, are all synastry. I don't know what the right word is, but they're all harmonious together without even knowing it.
Is that the word synthesize?
Synthesize. Yeah, synthesizing. Yeah, I was trying to think of the word for synergizing. The word for synastry.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'm so excited to synergize with you, Raven, more. I'm so grateful for our connection. And thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your wisdom and expertise around these topics. If people would like to find you and work with you and listen to your fantastic show, how can they do so?
I would say the best place to go, since I'm in transition and limbo of all my website and links, is to go to anywhere you stream podcasts and go to Empath and the Narcissist Podcast. Mine has a picture of me, a little blue symbol, and we're healing there with spirituality and human design. And then all my links are in the show notes there. It's probably the best way to find me.
Perfect. And you and I are actually about to jump on recording a live, and you've been going live every Wednesday.
Yeah. So people can for that. Yes, I'm going to keep on doing it. I think this is my fourth in a row. So I'm very proud of myself because lives have been a challenge for me to be consistent with in the past. We're going to be going live on YouTube. I do have a YouTube channel, Empath Rising with Raven Scott. You can find me there too and subscribe. And we're going to go live. I'm so excited.
Me too. Let's get out of here so we can get over there. The other virtual realm. One virtual realm to another. All right. Thank you so much, Raven.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and being such a great friend, fellow Virgo.
Right back at you.
That wraps up our episode for today. Thank you so much for listening to Women Waken. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and come back for more. If you'd like to connect with the Women Waken community, you can find us on Instagram at Women Waken. And if you follow Women Waken, you can get a free tarot card reading if you just send a DM. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and don't forget to let your unique light shine into this world.